Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Fred Maroon, he's a journalist, he's a blogger, inter alia for publications such as the Times of Israel. Interestingly, he's a Canadian of Arab origin and he lived in Lebanon until 1984. I follow Fred on social media. I find he has an interesting take, a very nuanced take on the Middle East conflict, and I thought his perspective would be really interesting. So Fred Maroon, how fantastic it is to have you with us again here on 101.9 Chai FM.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Simon. Thank you for inviting me to your show again. Great to be here.
So, Fred, I didn't get to ask you last time, but events have kind of overtaken us, and it suddenly dawned on me that you have a very nuanced view of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I think it's really fair. And I was wondering, a man of your background, probably educated quite differently to what one would assume, where was there room? How did you arrive at this point of having such a nuanced view?
I guess I've always been very progressive in my outlook. I grew up in Lebanon, and a lot of the education system in Lebanon is based on the French system.
Okay.
So most of my education was in French.
Okay.
I read a lot of books written by French people. I learned French history. The revolution, progressive ideas.
Sure.
And so when I started, learning about the Israel-Arab conflict, what I saw was that, Israel was trying to survive, and there was a lot of very large countries around it that were trying to destroy it. And I just saw that didn't make any sense.
So, yeah, that's what I find quite remarkable, is you have been very vocal in your support of Israel's right to self-defense. And I'm thinking it's kind of expected from a Jew to take that position, not so expected from somebody with an Arab background. What kind of flack have you been taking lately for the views that you've been expressing?
I have really not heard much from Arab people or people who are anti-Israel. I guess they tend to ignore me. I do have some Arab friends, obviously. Most of them don't comment when I write about the Israel-Arab conflict. There is a small number that do, and we don't totally agree, but they are very respectful, and, it's fine. I don't really have friendships with people who are very, rabidly anti-Israel.
Okay, no, that's really interesting, because I thought that social media was a place where everybody got to just, bring out the worst in themselves. And I thought you would have faced a lot of abuse, but I'm kind of glad that that's not the case.
Yeah, but I avoid groups where it's free for all, basically. I mostly debate people on my own page. And so it's only people who are on my friends list.
Fred, so then moving on to the last 11 days or so, because I think many of us who are Jewish are kind of struggling with a cognitive dissonance, a kind of trying to understand why we see things in a certain way, and yet the vast majority, apparently, of the rest of the world doesn't see it that way. And in fact, the reactions compared to the last Gaza conflagration are completely so much more extreme than this time around than they were last time. How do you explain what's going on here?
I have as much difficulty as you explaining it. I mean, to me, it's nothing to do with being Arab or Jewish or anything. If you look at a situation where a country is being attacked by a group of terrorists, is the word I use. The media tends to call them whatever. They avoid the word terrorist, but they are launching rockets against civilian areas. That is a war crime. I mean, there's no way around it. There's no justification for that. I mean, I don't agree with some of Israel's policies, but I don't think that launching rockets on civilians is the way to address the issue. There are many other ways. The Palestinians have allies all over the world, obviously, as we saw these last few days. There are people who jump up and down to say we're pro-Palestinian. Well, where are those people when it comes to helping the Palestinians build a peaceful state next to Israel? Where are those people when it comes to denouncing Hamas? We know that groups like Hamas and even to a smaller extent, Fatah, are the obstacle to having a two-state solution where the Palestinians would have their own state. Because Hamas doesn't want a two-state solution, and I'm not really convinced that Fatah does either, even though they say they do. And Hamas has said it very explicitly. They want to destroy Israel. So how do you compromise with people like that?
So, you know,
U.S. President Joe Biden said something yesterday that I totally agree with. He said, until the Arab world, or he didn't use the term Arab world, but until the region accepts that Israel exists as a Jewish state unequivocally, until then there will be no peace. And that's absolutely true.
And what happens when Jews themselves, and I'm thinking about somebody like Peter Beinart, who used to be a great supporter of a two-state solution, says that time has passed, that the settler initiative has destroyed any hope that there might be. The only solution on the table is a one-state solution.
I don't follow him that closely. Obviously, I know his name. But I hear people from both sides say the two-state solution is dead because of this, because of that. The settlements is not the reason why. If the two-state solution is dead, it's not because of the settlements. I mean, I'm not a fan of the settlements. But, you know, let's be reasonable here. If you look at the map of the West Bank, the settlements are mostly something like 90% of the settlements are in a thin strip near Israel. You know, if the Palestinians suddenly became very peaceful and accepted Israel's existing as a Jewish state, and they said, you know, we want to end this, we don't want any more fighting, and they look really reasonable, I think that Israel would agree to perhaps either move the settlements or put them, at least some of the settlements, or put them under Palestinian jurisdiction if it looks like the Palestinians are going to be able to live peacefully with them. I don't think the settlements are the issue. I mean, also, when you think about it, there are 2 million Arabs living within Israel. Why can't there be a few hundred thousand Jewish people living within Palestinian state?
That's an interesting point you bring up, that of the Arab-Israeli issue. I think many of us were really very, very shocked to see the disturbances happening all over the country, whether it be in Akko, whether it be in Lod, whether it be in Bat Yam. Did that take you by surprise, the reaction of the Israeli Arabs to the current crisis?
No, it doesn't. I mean, in fact, I was surprised that it hadn't happened earlier because, I mean, you can see from the way their political leaders behave, the Arabs have not embraced the idea of a Jewish state. They massively vote for small Arab parties that have never been in government and that will likely never be in government for the foreseeable future, which doesn't make any sense. You know, if they accept the fact that Israel is a mostly Jewish state, then they would be voting for mainstream parties. I mean, there are Jewish parties that are mostly Jewish that are very pro-Arab, that have no problem with Arab-Israeli. In fact, practically all Israeli parties are that way. There are only a couple of fringe parties that almost never get elected that are anti-Arab. People don't vote for those mainstream parties. And so obviously they're not comfortable with the idea of living in a Jewish state.
Fred, there's another issue I want you to weigh in on, and that is the incredible occurrences of anti-Semitism that we've seen, be it in Los Angeles or New York or Montreal or London. Once again, what's your reaction to that? Did that surprise you?
It surprised me a little bit in the sense that I didn't expect it would be this bad. But, I mean, there is a lot of anti-Semitism, as obviously you know, in the world. And I think anti-Semites use this kind of situation as an excuse. But also I think that there is a lot of people who just don't think. You know, they look at the situation where, yeah, Israel has a stronger army, and they see pictures of some Palestinians being killed, and they don't really think through the whole thing. What is Israel supposed to do when it's attacked, when its cities are attacked? These are not like small attacks. These are hundreds of rockets that were launched against Tel Aviv. what is Israel supposed to do? Israel responded by doing very surgical strikes. When you think about it, the number of people who died in this war in Gaza was, I think the last count I heard was 233. Yeah, there should be no deaths, but 203 is not a lot when you think about it. Israel has the capability to cause a lot of damage very quickly. If it was trying to kill people, there would have been tens of thousands of deaths, hundreds of thousands possibly, if it was trying to kill people. But it wasn't. It was trying to disable the ability of Hamas to attack again.
We're very soon going to run out of time. Maybe a final question to you. After the euphoria of the Abraham Accords and seeing that, hey, wait a minute, this isn't actually a religious war. This is something completely different, because the relations between the UAE and Israel was really quite incredible. How does one get to leverage that sense of optimism and opportunity in the context of Israel right now?
Well, I think the only way that I see this conflict ending is that the Arab world has to take responsibility for this conflict. They started the conflict because in 1947, there was a UN partition plan. And the Arab countries said, no, we're not going to accept that. If they had said to the Palestinians, you know, this is an opportunity for you guys to have a state, you never had one, you should just accept it. Then it would have been the end of it. But the Arab world said, no, we're not going to accept this. And they started a war with Israel. And that caused a lot of refugees. It caused all the issues that we've seen since then. So the Arab world has to take responsibility and say, you know, we started this, we're going to end it. And the way we're going to end it, we're going to find a solution. And we're going to work with the Palestinians. We're going to tell them, you know, you're going to have to live with what the solution will be. And they're going to have to enforce the agreement. That's the only way I see this ending.
Fred, I should have ended with you about 2-3 minutes ago, but I found it way too interesting to do that. Once again, thank you so much for talking to me on Chai FM. Such an honor to have you speak to us. And hopefully that is just the second of many more.
Thank you. It's great to be here.